I used to think that to become a better writer, I needed to move to Ithaca and call myself John. It just seemed that population density supported this demographic much more so than happenstance alone would allow. But I suppose this is why I'm a writer, and not a statistician. In related news, I was recently stranded on a Caribbean beach with the latest novel of J. Robert Lennon, a writer who satisfies the criteria I just mentioned. Now, I've read most of the novels of J. Robert Lennon, enough so that I can see the increase in maturity from novel to novel. I can see the works become more calculated and more confident, riskier, and smarter. And I can also tell you with some authority that this latest, titled Familiar, is the best yet. It made me realise that one doesn't need to move to Ithaca and rename oneself, not that it's a bad name or a bad town. One simply needs to keep at it, to commit and recommit oneself to the language and to the craft, and keep chipping away at it. Which I know seems obvious, but sometimes the most obvious stuff is the stuff that I tend to forget. Good evening. It's Sunday, the 11th of November, 2012, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast, Strawberries, by J. Robert Lennon. She stood before the blender. She was blending. Inside the glass container, pink liquid swirled. Her right hand lay on top, holding the lid on. The blender made a loud noise, a grinding, and the air smelled like burning oil. She didn't know what the liquid was in the blender. She tried to remember what she'd put in there, but couldn't. There was only her right hand holding the lid on the blender, and her left hand on the pulse button. She lifted her finger. The blending stopped. The noise of the blending stopped. She could hear herself breathing. She opened the container and put her finger inside. Then she put the finger in her mouth. Bananas. Strawberries. She looked down at the counter. There were the leafy tops of strawberries on a wooden cutting board, a banana peel, a container of yogurt, half empty. She had made a blended fruit drink. She could not remember deciding to make such a thing. She could not remember ever making one before. Beside the blender were two glasses. "What are you doing?" She turned, started. There was a man sitting in front of a magazine at the kitchen table. Her husband. For a moment she hadn't recognized him. He had shaved his beard. She said, "Your beard." "You made your point," her husband said. "I'm growing it back already. I can't grow it any faster." Angrily, he thrust out his chin, grunting. He turned back to his magazine. She knew it was afternoon. Somehow she knew that, though she couldn't remember the morning. What was he doing home? It must be Sunday. She looked up at the clock, and the clock wasn't there. Just a blank white space accentuating the dirtiness of the wall. A nail stuck out from the space. "Where's the clock?" she said. "Broken. Hello?" He did not look up from his magazine. She poured the fruit drink into the two glasses. She stood at the counter, her hands around the glasses, thinking. Where had she gotten the idea to make this? Had it been his idea? Why wasn't he making it? She was eager to drink it, that was certain, but why? Did she like it? Was it something she liked? "I feel funny," she said. She turned to her husband. He was staring at her as if he had just realized something. "You're not changing your mind, are you?" he said. His voice was fearful. She turned. "About what?" "About everything." He stroked his face. "I wish to God I could grow this back faster." It wasn't clear what he meant by this. She sat down at the table and gave him his drink. Then she sat across from him. She took a sip from her glass. It was exactly as she expected, though she hadn't been expecting it. Strawberries and bananas. The liquid in the glass was pink, and she wondered what it might be. She put her finger in and then licked it. She looked up at her husband. "Your beard," she said. "You shaved." He didn't say anything at all. Behind him there was a blank space on the wall in the shape of their clock, with a nail sticking out from it. She realized how dirty the wall was. She said, "Where's the clock?" He looked up at her. He leaned closer. His bare face. She hadn't seen it in years. Though she didn't remember those years, she only had the feeling that it had been years, that years ago she had seen him like this. She said, "What are you doing home?" After a moment he said, "Are you all right?" She studied his face. Something unfamiliar was in it. Without his beard, all his expressions were magnified. She couldn't tell what they meant any more. Carefully, she said, "I feel funny." She let him lead her to the car. He guided her by the hand and elbow, as if she were pregnant. But instead of getting in behind the wheel, he went back into the house. Why was he doing that? Wait. She had been pregnant, hadn't she? What had happened with that? She looked down at her belly, ran her hand over it. It was flabby, a little bit, but she didn't think she was pregnant. She looked out the windshield at two boys playing in the street. She thought, "What am I doing in the car?" In a moment her husband approached, holding a baby wrapped in blankets. She thought, "He looks good holding that baby, like a real father. We should have one. We should have a baby." She watched him open the rear door and latch the baby into a rear-facing child's seat. Something was different about her husband. He shut the rear door and slid into the driver's seat. "What happened to your beard?" she said. He looked at her, blinking. "Where are we going?" she said. He started the car and pulled away from the curb. Two boys who had been playing in the street moved aside to let them pass. She said, "Who's your friend?" and made herself laugh. It came out wrong. "What?" "I mean, there's a baby back there," she said more quietly now. "Uh-huh," he said. She glanced into the back and could see the top of the baby's head. It was a small baby, a new one. She didn't know its name, but seemed to know that it was a girl. She turned back to her husband and studied his face. Something in his manner, something in the set of his shoulders and jaw filled her with sadness, and she wanted to touch him. She reached out and touched him. She stroked his face, and she realized she hadn't touched him this way in a long time. "Oh," she said, "your face." He half turned to her with an expression of worry and fear. "Did you used to have a beard?" "Yes." "How do I know?" she said, but she lost her train of thought. Now she looked out the window. They were on the county highway, headed out of town. She looked back at the driver's seat. And there was a man sitting there, a clean-shaven man, who was supposed to have a beard. But how did she know that? The man was good-looking, but his expression was hard. Still, she felt she ought to be comforted by the sight of him. She said, "Hi." "Hi," the man said, his jaw tight. He didn't look at her. "Where are we going?" she asked him. From the back of the car came a cry, and she screamed. A doctor looked into her eyes and felt her hands and forehead. A nurse drew blood. "Anne," the doctor said, "how do you feel?" Well, her body felt fine. She was a little tired, maybe, and she could taste strawberries, though she didn't remember eating any. Was that why she was here? Something to do with the phantom strawberries? Maybe she was having a hallucination, a taste hallucination. Now, she heard the sound of a baby crying somewhere nearby. It distracted her. She felt as if she was supposed to answer a question, but she didn't know what it was. She turned and saw a man with a baby in his arms. The sight startled her. "What is it?" the doctor said. "Him!" But as she said it, she realized, without knowing why, that it was a foolish thing to say. "I shaved," said the man. "Oh," she said, and she didn't understand why he was telling her this. She didn't understand why these people were here, or why she was here, or where here was. "Anne," said the doctor, "maybe you should feed the baby. She wants to eat." The man brought her the baby. As it approached, she grew frightened, but when it landed in her arms, she deftly unbuttoned her blouse and took out her breast. The nipple was small and hard, and she was reminded of a nail sticking out of a dirty wall. The baby took the nipple into its mouth, as if the two of them had done this 1,000 times before. The baby sucked. Amazing! Her mouth tasted like strawberries, and when she looked up, two men were staring at her, their faces expectant. One was dressed like a doctor. The other, a clean-shaven man, was scowling. His eyes were moist. He said, "I was right, wasn't I? You've changed your mind." She tried to smile. "I'm sorry?" "About everything," the man said. The other man, the one dressed like a doctor, turned to him in apparent confusion. "I knew you would," the first man, the clean-shaven one, said. Though, of course, both men were clean-shaven, but this one was more clean-shaven somehow. What he said was true. She had changed her mind. But what had she changed her mind about? She felt her body begin to tremble, heard herself begin to say, "Oh, my God," as she noticed that there were two men in the room, and they were staring at her, and one of them was dressed like a doctor, and this one was lunging for her because she was screaming now, and because she had felt a tug at her breast and looked down and seen that her blouse was open and her breasts were bare, and there was a baby there, in her arms, somebody's baby, with its mouth on her nipple. And she tasted strawberries, and she was leaping up in terror because she had changed her mind, and because there were two men in the room, and because there was a baby rolling away from her bare breasts and tumbling to the floor.